Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Called third strike, Astros sweep the Mariners. Roberto Osuna saves all three games. And the Astros finish it off by retiring the last 19 Mariner batters.
Sit down, be humble, Seattle.
Man.
Astros went into Seattle to face the best team and the hottest team in Major League Baseball. They left the hottest team in baseball their damn selves. They sweep the Seattle Mariners, capped off yesterday with a 3-2 win. They've won 9 straight as a team. They're off today. They'll face the Oakland A's. Yesterday was not only a statement because the Astros basically put Seattle in their place, a team that we thought was rebuilding and got off to one of the hottest starts in the MLB. But it also just showed the greatness. I think yesterday was a showcase of the greatness of Jeff Luhnow. And we already know what the core of the Astros World Series is. We can name the names. Jose Altuve, Correa, Bregman, Springer, all those guys, Verlander. We can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, just look at the impact these guys made yesterday when they needed it most. Down 2-0 in the sixth inning. Michael Brantley, a free agent signing courtesy of Jeff Luhnow, hits a double that knocks in 2 runs and ties the game. Then Elidnis Diaz, who was an all-star that Jeff Luhnow traded for, he hits a solo shot. That's all of the offense courtesy of offseason moves that Jeff Luhnow made. Then you look at what happened at the end of the game. They retire 19 straight hitters. Gerrit Cole retires the final 10 that he faces. That's a trade that Luhnow made last year. And then the eighth and ninth inning, they've been on lock for a long time. Ryan Pressly, an under-the-radar trade last year. And then Roberto Osuna, a not really under-the-radar trade, but a trade that Jeff Luhnow made as well.
He was definitely on the radar, but I think part of Osuna last year, even though he was effective, he wasn't this. I mean, he's like nails. I mean, he's dominant. I think part of that was the kind of the backlash, kind of the controversy that surrounded him getting here. It affected everybody. Even teammates were kind of uncomfortable just even talking about him. And then all of a sudden, you know, he feels more comfortable. They understand. They've kind of reached this agreement. You know, he kind of stays in the background outside of closing the games. He just does what he does and moves on. And he is as good as it gets. And oh, by the way, Justin Verlander and Gerrit Cole, you talk about a punctuation mark, an exclamation point on just slapping the Mariners around in their own house. Those two guys, how many strikeouts? 22 strikeouts and 2 starts between the two of them? That was incredible.
Gerrit Cole, and sold him short. He struck out 11, but he retired the last 10 batters. This bullpen, we said it after they had the rough start in Tampa Bay. This is going to be the best bullpen the Astros have had in a long, long time. Mm-hmm. And it's only going to get better. And Jeff Luhnow's fingerprints are all over this thing. It's one thing to build a core. I'm not saying it's easy, but when you're tanking, it's a little bit easier to build a core like Luhnow did. But my God, the pieces that he's added, they've been second to none when it comes to what he's done. But the Houston Astros off today. We're going to get more into the Astros throughout the show. And tomorrow, another edition of the Sparkle Princess Diaries.
Uh-oh.
So we'll have that for you tomorrow. Apparently, Carlos Correa and his wifey ate some grasshoppers. We'll break that down for you. Also, last night, this was the nightcap. The Houston Rockets made a statement in Game 1 against the Utah Jazz. We remember in the Western Conference semifinals last year, Rockets topped them in 5 games. Yesterday, they win Game 1, 122-90. James Harden doing what he did. Really didn't play as much in the fourth. They kind of took their foot off the gas, but he finishes with 29 points, 8 rebounds, 10 assists. Clint Capella, 16-12. We said heading into this, the key to this series was Clint Capella versus Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert cannot get outplayed like Clint Capella like he did last season. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, he got outplayed by Clint Capella, and the scoreboard shows. If Clint Capella outplays Rudy Gobert, the Rockets are going to win this series, and it's not going to be difficult. However, did you see anything in that game yesterday? Because it should be noted, and I know a lot of people are talking sweep after that win, game ones are often blowouts for the home team. It happens a lot in the NBA. It's game two that you really need to look at, because what is the OG saying that a lot of people say about series?
Game two is the most important game of the entire series. I've been saying it for decades. A lot of people say game five. A lot of people say it doesn't become a series until a team wins on the road. Well, that has to do something to do with game two. Mine is a simple math equation, basically, because let's say, first of all, on your point on the Jazz, they did show some signs early. And I think they didn't execute, and I don't mean to sound like a coach, they didn't execute their plan the right way. They were basically trying to take the ball, the three-pointers, away from James Harden early. It didn't work. He was still getting it because he's James Harden.
PJ 3-for-6 in the first half, PJ
right.
Tucker.
Yeah, and that helped as well. So it backfired, but I think just kind of on a larger picture, if somehow they did show some signs that they could hang here.
Utah?
Yeah, Utah did. If the Rockets win game two, the series is over.
Really?
The series is over if the Rockets win game two.
It's a bold claim, John. I've seen a lot of teams go up 2-0, and then you go on the road, and it's completely different.
Well,
next thing you know, you come back for game five tied at two.
Here's my reasoning why, and it's why I always believe game two is so important. Do you honestly think that the if the Rockets win game two, that the Jazz could win 4 out of 5 games?
No. But I think they could win 2 at home.
But they can't win 4 out of 5. If the Rockets win game 2, the series is over.
Okay.
They cannot.
Mark that, Figgy.
They will not lose to the Jazz 4 out of 5. Here's the thing, and this is why it's such an important game. If the Jazz win game 2, all of a sudden the Jazz have
a best of 5 with home court.
Yep, a best of 5 with home court. It becomes a shorter series, and they have one on the road. You know, the whole, it's never really a series. So that's why game two is so important. Rockets win on Wednesday night, it's over.
I thought there were some signs yesterday that the Jazz can hang. First of all, Ricky Rubio didn't play last year. I think early on, you saw signs of why Ricky Rubio is important to this offense.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first thing to keep an eye on. Number two, I think Rudy Gobert, he has to have a fire under his butt. He is capable of outplaying Clint Capella. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. But I expect the Rockets to win this series, but I think there were some signs that this could be a little bit closer than people expect. It just kind of sucks that we have to wait till Wednesday for game two, but that's the nature of the beast when it comes to the NBA playoffs. Extremely spread out, but the Rockets, a statement win nonetheless. 11:40, a lot went on in the NBA. We're going to go through all the sounds, the sights and sounds, because Patrick Beverly, He might not be playing here anymore, but he's still a fan favorite out here in H-Town, and he's sticking to his brand and pestering
That's exactly
the likes
what
of Kevin Durant. That's exactly, and then Russell Westbrook, he's doing what he do as well, getting into it with reporters. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Sports Radio 610. Big weekend for the local teams, also a big weekend nationally.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it
in. He has done it. Tiger is back. Tiger is back on top. Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters champion. One of the great comeback stories in American sports history.
It's Tiger.
That's what they're saying, John. Damn you, Figgy. You disrespectful mofo. Just kidding. But that is what they're saying. They're calling it one of the greatest comeback stories in sports history, which I think is a little bit, I guess you can make a case.
I don't see how it can't be.
You can make a case for sure. It just seems like, I feel like he got over the hump. People were acting like he showed signs of this last year. He at least showed signs. I don't think people were counting Tiger out heading into this tournament, if you know what I mean.
I don't think people were counting him out, but was the durability there? You remember I asked John McLean in the leg hiking, you know, yes or no, will Tiger finish in the top 15 at Augusta? And McLean said no, and it was kind of hard to argue.
It's a rough week for McLean yesterday in leg hiking.
Just because of you know, the track record is there. And when you consider the personal and physical devastation, I mean, it's not even, you know, just little hitches or small things. The devastation he had on a personal and physical level, knees, neck, back, a very public divorce, very public I guess
DUI arrest.
DUI arrest.
Three back surgeries.
Sexual addiction, sexual misconduct, but deviance maybe. I mean, he was devastated on virtually every front. And keep this in mind as well. He's in his 40s. You know, and that's not something that to be taken lightly. People don't win majors in their 40s very often, period. on top of the injuries and the personal problems and everything else.
Could I interest you in a stat?
Please.
16 months ago, you know what Tiger Woods was ranked in the world?
Mm-hmm.
1,199th in the world 16 months ago.
That's not even, that's a college player. College players are drafted.
That's an amateur.
Are ranked in the thousands. Here's the other thing for all those people who say, this kind of speaks to your point that, you know, he kind of had a chance, but you're not there until you get there. You know what I mean?
For sure.
You know, and so you can.
Some guys go their whole career without getting over that hump.
Ricky Fowler. Gosh, that guy's had a chance every freaking major.
Still making six figures a tournament, though.
And he hadn't won it, but he's always in the contention. So you're not there until you're there. But here's the other thing. People say, see, this is for all those people, all you know-it-alls that said he would never win another. He said he would never win another. Tiger Woods at the Champions Dinner said, I think I'm done, to the other golfers. So this wasn't like, you know, all you guys saying he'll never win another one. First of all, that's kind of a weird straw man. But Tiger Woods himself told other people at last year's Champions Dinner, I think I'm done, or 2 years ago.
Landry Locker, John Lopez, Sports Radio 6. And I got emotional watching that yesterday. I was at the last major Tiger Woods won 14 years ago at Torrey Pines. And I can speak, based on my experience, that was one of the best things that I've ever experienced. Just the
can
buzz
I interest
that
you in
comes
a quick
with
stat.
It. Go ahead, real quick.
Real quick. The last time he won the Masters, Facebook was 1 year old.
There we go.
And Twitter did not exist.
Goodness. Just absolutely crazy. But the buzz is crazy. One of my buddies was actually on the call. You just heard Mike Tirico, courtesy of Westwood One. Another guy who was on assignment out there at the Masters, buddy Ted Emmerich of Westwood One in ESPN. He's called Usain Bolt races. He's called Michael Phelps races. He's called Olympics. This is his fifth year calling the Masters. He's called a lot of big events. But I got to ask you, Ted, and thank you very much for joining us live from Augusta. What was this event like compared to all the other events that you've covered in your time in your broadcasting career?
To be in the presence of that greatness for that moment, a moment that so many of us never thought was going to happen again. We had hoped it would happen. We dreamed of it happening. What would it be like if Tiger could win just a major again? And for it to be here at the Masters, and him putting that green jacket over the red mock turtleneck, it's like you're stepping into a time machine. And that was the beauty of it. That you know, you look at him with his family and hugging his kids, his daughter Sam, his son Charlie. I mean, that image is everywhere now. Of course, his mom Tita as well. And you think back to 97, he steps off the green after just dominating the field, and he's hugging his father, Earl, you know, who's now long gone. But, oh, my gosh, the symmetry of all of that, not to mention the story of what he has come back from, the physical and the personal issues, and many of them self-inflicted in the tabloid headlines and all of that. I mean, it's better than anything Hollywood could ever come up with. It's something that you only dream of, and so to bear witness to it was an absolute treat.
You know what struck me the most was he's still Tiger. He cuts that image. He's in such good shape. You know, he's a physical presence. He looks like Tiger, maybe just a little bigger, but muscle. But what struck me is he really won this tournament more like what Jack did when Jack was in his 40s. He managed it. He put the ball in the right spot. He used the green in certain areas as backstops. You know, he wasn't the longest driver, which is rare, and his irons were on top. But he really was just, it was experience, it seemed like, that did as much for him as anything.
And, John, the perfect example of that was at 12. It was at Golden Bell. This is the hole where Masters dreams go to die. We saw that 3 years ago with Jordan Spieth and landing in the water twice. And what did Francesco Molinari do? He has a two-shot lead, and he's going straight for the pin. You don't do that on Sunday at the Masters. Molinari lands in the water. Brooks Koepka, who finished a shot back and could have very well forced a playoff with Tiger, who knows that how that would have gone. Koepka made double bogey there, just like Molinari did later. And what does Tiger do? He makes the smart play. He uses his experience. He said it early in the week, John. He said, I've got a pretty little library of how to play this course, and he looks on that bookshelf. He finds the right book. He's perusing. He flips open the page, and he finds on Sunday at the Masters, you make the smart play. You don't get aggressive there, because that hole, while as tempting as it looks, that's where it all can end for you. And Tiger lands it on the green behind the bunker. Yeah, he's 40 feet away, whatever it is, but it's a par. It's a two-putt par. It's the right play. And that's how Tiger was able to surge into the lead, picking up those strokes after Molinari made double bogey.
Talking to Ted Emmerich live from the Masters. He was on the call yesterday with Westwood One's Masters coverage. What about the buzz afterwards? Because I feel like we could get a sense of the buzz immediately after he won. But let's, like, an hour and a half, 2 hours after, just what is the atmosphere like? Because I've experienced Tiger winning a major before, and it seems like that buzz, it just lasts. It just lasts for a couple hours after. What was the mood like yesterday, a couple hours after? And what's it like today, you know, as you're kind of catching your breath and looking back on what you witnessed yesterday?
You walk out of the media center and everyone is doing the same thing, Landry. We're shaking our heads like, did that just happen? Did we really just see that? I mean, that's what it was. It's you know what? We hear the word surreal so often nowadays. It has become so trite. It is so overused. This is the definition of that. This is where that word fits. This guy was ranked 1,200th in the world 2 years ago and basically told everyone at the Champions Dinner at the Masters, yeah, I'm probably not going to play again. I mean, the guy was just about to have spinal fusion surgery. He couldn't get out of bed. He couldn't even play with his kids. You know, this guy was getting arrested for a DUI, you know, just days, you know, weeks after the surgery. There was no way he was going to get back to the course. He just wanted to walk again. And for one of the greatest stars in the history of sports to return to the top of the mountain, it gives you chills. And yes, even a day later, you're like, did that really just happen?
One more for you before we let you go. No one thought, as you just illustrated, he would get to 15. Does he get to 18 and then 19?
Oh, you're doing this, John. You're really doing this.
Oh, boy. All bets are off now. I say he absolutely has a great chance. He's this close to being at 17 right now.
Yeah.
Like what he did at Carnoustie at the British Open last year and then at Bellerive at the PGA. Can you imagine that? Now, he had to work his way up. He had to prove to himself that he could win again. He did that in Atlanta at the Tour Championship last September. But, I mean, you look at the rest of this year, look where the majors are. Okay, Bethpage for the PGA.
He's won there.
He's won there. Okay, let's move on to the U.S. Open, Pebble Beach.
He's won there.
Yeah, so, you know, and then, you know, at the Open Championship, like, this could just forget about, you know, okay, end of story. Like, is this where the movie ends? Like, yes, I guess traditionally, if you're going to make a two-hour movie about Tiger, like, that's the dramatic return. That's the climax. He finishes it off. But this might just be the beginning of the return to glory for Tiger.
Ted Emmerich live from Augusta. He was on the call yesterday for Westwood One. Ted, we appreciate you for taking some time to join us. Have a safe flight back to Texas.
Appreciate it, man. Take care.
That's BET, Big Event Teddy, as I call him. He was on the call. Fifth year, he's called the Masters, also called Usain Bolt. He's called Michael Phelps. He calls the Olympics. He's done a lot of things, but as you heard him say, few of them bigger than what Tiger Woods did yesterday. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, the 10 dumbest moves made in the offseason by NFL teams. Texans fans, you're going to like what you hear. We promise. That's next.
That's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.